Welcome to Circles Off, episode number 64. Had a run of a couple weeks in a row where I knew a player with that jersey number. I unfortunately cannot think of a number 64.
I have one. Okay. It's a half-year jersey number. Potentially one of the biggest busts in NHL history. Some would argue the biggest bust at first overall in the NHL.
I still
don't. Half season on the Edmonton Oilers. Nail Yakupov. Number 64 before he switched to number 10. And in fact, throw me that jersey, Zach. Open that door right there.
Do we have a Yakupov jersey here?
Just, you see it in there or no? Just
give me 2 seconds.
All right. I did a quick Google search. Google Images search.
Toss that.
Mikhail Granlund. Wow, we actually do have a Yakupov. Mikhail Granlund is a 64.
Nail Yakupov, number 64. I'm going to put this on.
Why do you own that?
For the episode.
Why do you actually own that? I'm looking at someone with the Miami Dolphins on the offensive line. I mean, these are what we're dealing with here. Once it gets into the higher numbers, it's a little bit more difficult, I think, or like these mid-60s. But yeah, we don't... It is a sweet jersey, though. I've always liked the Oilers' colors.
Episode 64.
Nail Yakupov.
Nail Yakupov. What a jersey, man. Picked this thing up on Boxing Day 1 year. Dirt cheap. Don't even know why I got this. But I believe it was literally too cheap to not buy it. That's what it was.
It's kind of funny you guys started doing this because I used to do a podcast like a while ago. And at the beginning of each episode, we would dedicate that episode to a player that wore that number. We did it like all the way through. We got to 99 and then that was it.
Where do you think we got this idea from?
It's not a bad idea.
Yakupov, Edmonton Oilers. Tag still on. Rob, what's going on this week?
I'm getting into football season now because now we start to have the NFL training camps, which is actually, it's good that we're going to do tweets that trigger us for this week. We haven't done one since the episode that aired at the beginning of June. So it's going on 2 full months now without some tweets that trigger us. But I've seen a bunch this week, too many to choose from, about the whole concept of like only the true degenerates, only degens bet the NFL preseason. These are the ones that get me the most. Always happens during spring training baseball. People are like, oh, you're absolutely insane. You're nuts if you bet spring training. You're nuts if you bet NFL preseason. And it's like the lines move way more than the regular season. The edge is much larger. Now, granted, you can't get as much money down, obviously. But people seem to not understand the concept of like line movement. And the larger the line move, the more opportunity that can be had in that market. It drives me crazy.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, another example of this is like just you don't have to make money on the most glorious stuff. Just again, whatever money is made, that's the real winner. If you're making a lot of money, it's good. So the money is the same if it's made on NFL regular season or preseason. And $100 is $100. $1,000 is $1,000.
Yeah, it doesn't make a difference. But like when we're talking about preseason, like there's such a major news advantage too. Like you get stuff like if you just read, not everyone in the world has time to read every single news source that's out there, follow every single beat writer and so on and so forth. But when you start to get word that no players on the first team offense are going to play for so-and-so team, that now creates an edge on the other team where you don't even have to have some sort of mathematical model. You just need to be able to process information in real time and go bet it out quickly. It's one of the most simple things to do. You know, we talked about this around spring training for baseball, but where else are you going to find sports where you get like a double-A team, a minor league team that's basically dressing against a full major league roster? It just doesn't happen all that often. So I'm always dumbfounded because it's usually someone that doesn't bet on sports, doesn't understand betting. They just put people into a class of being a degenerate because they're betting preseason sports when in reality, there's a lot of money to be made there. So I think that's a lesson to people out there that, you know, don't discriminate just because of what people are betting. There's edge to be had everywhere. But NFL preseason always gets me going because, another thing, which I tweeted about today, which I always notice, I try to follow beat writers in lots of sports because there's obviously like an advantage. These people are around the teams every day. You might gain some, you know, valuable information. But during preseason, it's not only for the NFL, for every sport. I don't know why no beat writers can like say something bad about a player. It's always like, this guy looks amazing. What an off season, best shape of his life. He's out here like fully, just tell it how it is, man. Like, are they scared that they're not going to have coverage to the team anymore? If they like put the funniest one was some guy. No, I don't even know who it is. I don't care to name who it was. Doesn't matter who it was. It was a whole thing about how Daniel Jones looked great. The responses to that tweet were all like, hey man, I was also like watching today. Daniel Jones threw like 5 interceptions directly to defensive back. I've never seen a quarterback play worse. It was just a whole long list of guys that are like, I don't know what you were watching type of thing. And that kind of stuff is like, I wish we could just get to a situation or a point where like I didn't have to dig through about a million things to find out how a player actually performed or how a player is actually looking. I get it. Like, some people just don't want to ruffle feathers. Then just don't tweet, man. Don't straight up lie to me about how a player looked because, you know, you're trying to generate some buzz.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely brutal. Like, they never say this guy, like, they'll do only the stuff that when they say he looks bad is like, this guy came into camp overweight.
Yeah.
Because that's just like a quantifiable thing that gets released and then they just say that. But they don't actually ever say like, this guy looked absolute trash, dropped 6 balls, and like he's probably going to be cut tomorrow.
Well, we talked about it on Charge It to the Game this week on the Monday show. There was a picture that went out, and all the media captions on it was like, George Pickens is going to be unstoppable. George Pickens is special, blah, blah, blah. And it's him basically like diving backwards, making this catch above his head back. Well, someone replied to the clip, to the picture with the video of that catch, he dropped the pass.
But that, okay, like that happens all the year with rookies, right? Sky Moore is like the huge buzz right now with the Chiefs, going to be the Tyreek Hill replacement. I'm not saying he's going to have a bad season or whatever, but like, I think the guy will probably be a good player, but like already talking about him like he's Tyreek Hill based off like a couple days in practice where I watched some videos, the guy is literally catching screen passes where no one is even like, it's just catching a screen pass and running the ball down the field in open space. Like, I get it. You get a lot of, like, the rejuvenation stories. Saquon Barkley looks amazing. Christian McCaffrey, so on and so forth. It's like, okay, fine. But I'm like, a realist. Like, just give me what I want to be delivered, real information. Stuff that I hate the amount of fluff nowadays in reporting. That's what drives me crazy. I respect the guy, like post game at the podium, that just gives the coach the tough question. Like, why did you punt on that 4th-and-1 at the 37-yard line? And then the coach will be like, oh, you know, this, you get, and then the guy will go right back in. He'll be like, yeah, but, you know, modern analytics tell us it was a bad move. Like, I like those guys that press. They're looking for the truth. They're not there just to big up their career and take a stepping stone and get in good with guys and so on and so forth. I want the truth.
But it's like life though. Now then those guys are just now in a bad spot. They don't want to have them, like, they're all this guy again. Like, I don't want to answer his questions. Like, the press conferences are not entertaining. Like, they're all just now like cookie cutter answers. But that's, you gotta ask some hard hitting questions.
Well, so that's where the balance comes into play, right? Because I agree with you. I don't find any of the, I don't want to say any of them, but the vast majority of press conferences are not entertaining because people ask questions that they already know the answer to. To me, that's like reporting 101. If you're going to ask someone a question that you already know the answer to, don't ask it. There are some exceptions, obviously. Like if you're, for example, we're running a podcast and there might be something I know the answer to, but I know 99% of the audience isn't going to or might find interesting, I will ask the question. But for the most part, like, don't ask questions where you know exactly what the guy's going to answer. Like, what good is that? You can put it in your article or whatever. So no, dig, man. Find out. Like, that's what the fans want to know. You lose a game on, like, a bad coaching decision and nobody says anything to the coach after the game. What the hell are these people in the room doing? Someone's got to ask that. And I get it. Okay, it's going to make it tougher for them going forwards. I'm not saying you have to go grill the coach every single game. But, like, you can ask it in a manner where it's like, hey, man, you know, some people would construe this as a bad decision. Can you walk us through your thought process on it? It doesn't have to be in a way where you're just trying to bury the guy.
And they, well, the worst part about those questions now is like any of the ones where someone does ask something that's like a little bit more, sometimes you now hear the coach be like, oh, like this guy. oh, what is he talking about? Like, you don't know the game. And it's like, he just asked if you, why'd you not go for it on fourth down when you basically conceded the game by punting, and they just get all cheesed. It is what it is.
I'll bring it back to a hockey reference, though. I will always remember the Rangers, Brooksy.
Tortorella?
And John Tortorella, right? Where, like, credit to the guy. He asked some tough questions. Maybe some of them were distasteful or a little bit spiteful as their relationship deteriorated.
Get what I'm saying, Brooksy?
Yeah, but Tortorella...
Get
that through your head, Brooksy. Like, that's what reporting is supposed to be. And like, that clip will live on forever because that guy did his job. It wasn't one where he just like went up there and served up a, you know, lobbed one up for Tortorella to hit out of the park. So always respect guys like that. We need more of it. We need more of it in preseason. I want the real takes.
Biggest respect to during the Conor McGregor versus Jose Aldo press tour. Versus Eddie Alvarez press tour, when a guy went up in a dress shirt and a tie to ask a question, looking all professional, and then he basically just started swearing and shit talking at Eddie Alvarez, but in the funniest possible way. We'll cut it into play that clip. Holy man, if you guys haven't seen that, one of the best clips ever within a press conference. He's like, starts with a professional question. He's like, hey, my question's for Eddie Alvarez. Like, you say Conor McGregor doesn't have a gas tank, and he's like going to run out of gas. He's like, but yet in your professional career, you've only been to the fifth round twice. And he starts getting fired up. He's like, and you lost both of them. He's like, why are you talking shit about the greatest? And he's like going nuts. And then basically McGregor steps in and starts. It was a great
clip.
You
want me to play it?
Sure, if you have it up.
This question is for Eddie Alvarez. You've been mentioning that Conor McGregor is not a championship fighter. He only has 2 to 3 rounds. Yet in your professional career, you've only went to the fifth round twice and lost one of them. What the fuck are you talking about? The fuck are you talking about? That's the champ. That's the fucking champ right there. Fuck you, man.
Wait, leave it. Yeah, he has a suit and a tie. What's your question? I love it.
My question was clearly, you've only been to the fifth round twice in your professional career and lost one of them. You're complaining that he has no gas.
His question is, why are you talking shit? That's his question. How the fuck you up there talking shit? Say it like it is. You're blessed. You're blessed that I chose you.
That is actually pretty funny. Conor McGregor is an all-time chirp artist, but then when he comes in there and he just interrupts him, he's like, his question is, why are you talking shit? It's so perfect, man. But yeah, that guy that asked that question, dressed up all professionally, man, that was all time. I was watching that interview live years ago, and then since then I've seen that clip so many times, man. I wish it was okay. Obviously, that's unprofessional.
Yeah, but listen, there's a level. That's hilarious, by the way. It's absolutely hysterical. But like, no reporter who's trying to earn a living is gonna come to press conferences and just, you know, break something out like that. But you can ask hard questions. That's the point, right? You can ask hard, and you can deliver, like.
That guy was actually that was a fan question, but the reason why it was so funny was because when he went up there, he didn't act like most of the fans are dressed in like fight gear and they walk up. This guy literally had a tie and a shirt on, and he walked up and said, like, my question is for Eddie Alvarez. When you're doing that, it seems like it's going to be professional. And then he just ripped into him.
Yep. I think the problem though becomes with the media people to the coaches and stuff is that you start to mix in
opinion.
Right. And but it's Steve Simmons going up there or somebody, and then they mix in that personal, and then it becomes a personal one-on-one, and then the coach gets mad at them, and then it affects future questions where maybe they don't bring the personal side of it into it, but then the coach is like, ah, screw this guy.
The challenge is you never know how anything is going to be construed or misconstrued nowadays, right? Like, I'm a Dallas Cowboys fan. If I was a beat writer for the Dallas Cowboys, I would probably just try to tell it how it is. Now, I don't know. I'm not in these situations, right? I don't deal with these players on a day-to-day basis. I don't know how they're going to react, if that's going to change their willingness to talk to me, so on and so forth. So I get that. But me as a person, that's how I would do my job. But like, watch training camp. Tell me who doesn't look good out there. Tell me, like, this guy looks slow. This guy looks like, you know, It's people know it's opinion, right? Obviously, you can get the guys like, oh, who are you? Who are you to judge football? Whatever. But like, people want real news. Like, if I'm following beat writers especially, their goal is not to just big up everyone on the team and like put the team up on a pedestal or a player up on a pedestal. It's to deliver news. That's what they're supposed to do. And even if it's their own opinion, they should just preface it with that. It's like, it's my opinion that this guy hasn't looked great in training camp so far. What's the problem with that?
I got to make sports reporting more fun.
It's there's that. So that those are the two things that have really gotten to me this week. And then it is first week of like NFL preseason Hall of Fame game coming up. We're getting to like college football swing. So we get the Twitter war every year, which you're not a huge Twitter guy like I am, but I consume all this stuff. I try not to get as involved with it. But you get this week where the majority of the Twitter touts, people are selling picks, start to release plays. Whether that's for preseason games, week one NFL, week one college football. Then you get the guys who slam those guys are like, I'll never understand why someone would release this edge this early. Like, wait, try to get more money down. Huge back and forth, people yelling at each other all the time. I never really know where I stand on that one because, you know, everybody's trying to earn and I get it in these different facets. It's frustrating for me whenever like I would like something and somebody gives it out a month in advance when, yeah, maybe limits are fine, but like the market hasn't really matured yet. But I do get the other side of it. Like everybody's in that position as well. So that's always something that fascinates me over the course of the first week of like August leading into football season is just the gambling Twitter community tearing each other apart. Per usual.
Yeah, well, if that doesn't that always happens now, but then it's basically a full-time thing. That's 24/7.
It's true. And it's always I'm not here to name names or whatever.
No, they don't tear each other apart. It's just like everyone's always like on a specific side and then like you're on that side. You're on the side of like, you know, screw the steam chasers and you just keep going on that.
But you know what gets me about it as well is these guys don't even talk to each other. They just make like backhanded, like these cryptic tweets about someone else. That's what makes me die of gambling. Twitter evolves over time. Every sort of I'm involved in crypto Twitter at one point, DFS Twitter. These are these different communities that they tend to evolve. But for some reason or another, back in the day, people used to go to war on gambling Twitter. Just all out assault on one another, back and forth, huge feuds. That kind of still happens now, but it's way more discreet. Like people just tweet shit behind other people's backs. Like you know exactly who they're talking about, but they don't tag them. They don't talk to them directly. Then that person finds out and they don't tweet back. They do the exact same thing. They just do like a backhanded thing where, you know, people are who are not in the loop are just trying to decipher. Very interesting community. I always love to discuss the interaction between humans because it fascinates me.
Are we wanting to tweets that trigger me or are we going to talk about the old piñata picks?
Let's do that too, actually. I forgot about that. I'm glad you brought that up. The most minus EV bets I definitely make over the course of every week. I'll even promote the sports book. I don't care because they offer it. So
I at least sign up through Betstamp so we can get some, so we sure. can at least support the product. If you're going to sign up at this sports book, sure. Message us on Twitter.
We do Betstamp as a company. We do office days, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Wednesday is the day before before each golf tournament every week. We like to throw down as an office. We like the community, you know, the camaraderie being on the same side. We at first tried to like do our own picks. We would have tailed one guy in the office, so tailed me sometimes.
No, we still do that.
We still do that.
But as a community.
So we discovered, I don't know, a couple months ago, we've known this exists. Essentially what this is you get a random golfer in the field at 125-1. So we collectively pool money in the office to do piñata picks every week. And we know
just a negative hold built in that 100%. They just have on the back end.
I'm not an idiot.
Pretty high
too. I know exactly what they're doing. Like over the long run, they're expected to take a certain amount of hold on each one of these bets. But we still try very hard to create a plus EV position. And we do stupid things sometimes. Like we recommend after we get a plus EV position, but we want to keep like pressing and keep getting more golfers, we try to bet it into someone else's account instead. So because we're convinced that, you know, maybe we won't get two plus EV positions in a row on the same account. But we did ours for this week and we built up some plus EV positions.
what's the damage this week?
We got Denny McCarthy, who's like the 10th shortest odds in the field at 125-1. He was our last pull. So let me preface this by saying, first pull, Zach, do you remember who the first one was?
Yeah, it was Scott Stallings.
I'm not in on this, by the way. I usually am super busy in the morning morning when these guys run it, but boy, does it seem fun. And usually there's like eruptions if they get someone big. Like,
yeah.
Johnny's not in on this. He's above this, but he'll spin a roulette wheel in the office against me for money.
100%. And I'll even give him the host edge. It's not that I want to be in on this. I'm usually in meetings and Wednesday mornings when you guys are running this.
Oh, I'll tell you this. It's the best. We're all standing around a phone waiting for Zach to hit the thing. We all like...
I just hold my phone out in the middle of the circle and then press it. And it takes like 5-10 seconds sometimes. Yeah. Loads up and then it just comes up with the golfer's name and a check mark beside them.
And then you get the 125-1.
There was one week.
You guys got Morikawa.
You got Morikawa back to back weeks. He missed the cut.
Both weeks.
Well, when you guys got Morikawa, the office erupted. Like this was they were like huddling up, jumping around.
And it was first go. Like it was first pinata and we got him and went nuts and then called it. And then he missed the cut.
I think Sports Interaction is plus one dime on us so far, yeah. If I had to guess. However, we had, Scott Stallings we got today, which was, he's roughly, I don't know, 50-1, something like in that range to win the tournament. Yeah. So already we're plus EV. We could stop there at Stallings because we got him at 125-1 price. He's really 55-1.
You're already up.
But of course, we're like standing around like a bunch of losers. We're like, no, there's no way we're only going to have one golfer for this week. Let's go. We fired.
I have the list.
Got some shit. Yeah.
The next person that we got, Jim Herman. Jim 175-1, I believe.
Not terrible at that point.
And then we go again and we get Austin Smotherman. He was like 275-1.
Yeah, and that's with the hold. So you know he's low likelihood.
So at this point, we're down bad. Yeah. We're like, our portfolio looked good. It's bad. We're going to press one more. Classic like gambling chase type of stuff. Denny McCarthy.
Yeah.
What is he?
28-1, something like
that.
Wow. Yeah. It was...
Wow. So all in on the total portfolio, you're up.
Slightly plus EV.
There's got to be like probably a 30% hold on that, maybe more.
You know what the worst part about it is? Obviously, when you're betting outrights, huge variance, right? Like we know that. You could build up a great portfolio every week and lose every tournament of the year. That's just the way it is. But we, for the most part, have built up some very good portfolios of just randomness.
Well, the one tournament too, we had Sung Jae Im. He pulls out the night before. Then the next week.
Did that void or
it void?
Voided the pinata. Yeah.
But it goes. This is the run we went on though with guys though. So we had Sung Jae Im pulls out a tournament night before. Next week, Morikawa misses the cut. Next week, Morikawa misses the cut.
Do you think Sports Interaction knows? Like Vegas knows?
Yeah. I mean, we might have to start fading the pinata. These guys write it on the whiteboard every day too. So I'll just come in and see the whiteboard and like, oh, that's who they got this.
Just bet them at their no price.
Yeah. Although the one time that there was a running office joke about betting someone no, do you remember this?
Max Homa.
And he won that tournament. It's actually insane. So here's another thing. We work with different sports books. BetStamp does. To get some odds, better prices, let's say. And we can put in some recommendations. We're like, yeah, you know, we want better odds on this guy.
Like a BetStamp special bet. If you follow us on social media, you'll see that we were able to do this. We're going to make it, it's coming in a big way for September. And we're going to, you know, do this all over. If you're in Ontario, especially, you're going to be getting some great value.
We call these BetStamp bangers, where we work with the sports book to get the best price in market on whatever we want to bet. And we were trying to come up with something for a golf for 1 week. And someone in the office recommended, let's get a bet stamp banger on Max Homa not to win the tournament -3,000, something like that. And we're all laughing. We're like, imagine he actually wins this week and Max Homa won that week. I can't believe that's the name he picked. Like, I cannot believe that that still happened.
Wait, did he win? Which one was
he won? He won the tournament. We're going nuts when he came in the following week.
No, I remember. I'm saying, what tournament was it? Was it like one of the ones where he's a big, big dog, or was it one of the
Wells
like,
Fargo ones that I think, barely right?
anyone yeah. plays in it?
I think it was the Wells Fargo. I'm gonna look it up.
I'm gonna directly talk to the sports book about turning the pinata picks into an actual segment that we're gonna run weekly in the office. We gotta get better than the whole big win, though. We can promote it. But it's got to be something better than
it's a great idea. I've done it for like the World Cup before. I'm not going to lie. It's not my first time doing pinata picks. Sometimes you just want to.
Yeah. Low money, I guess. Like if you're going to only put a couple bucks, like, but yeah, it's a lotto. Yeah. It's a lotto ticket.
Yeah. I got like a couple banger World Cup ones before. Didn't win.
It's just fun to have it as the. Everyone in the office is like riding the one thing.
No, I agree.
You're riding Scott Stallings this weekend. We're all hyped up over Scott.
I agree. We're gonna be doing a lot more come September, especially, and we'll see if we can even get some NFL pinatas or something. They do them like some of those ones are just frustrating. Like they'll do NFL pinata, but it's like number of points scored by like the Rams in Sunday Night Football, and you get a thing and you get like 4 points. Like, oh, come on, right? So you're like. You have a number and it's like 58. You're like, oh, I'm out. Like, they're putting up 58.
Yeah, they're not great bets. Like, I'm not trying to sell anyone on anything. By the way, zero paid promotion in this episode of Circles Off. Let me throw that out there. This is just a real conversation right now. But I do like the idea. Like, sometimes you get in the recreational mode of like, let me go for a sweat on a long shot. It's like the parlay bettors, right?
I'm not doing it too often. If you are going to sign up at Sports Interaction because you do want to bet these, then please... just message us or we'll link if you can use our code and just support the app. Helps keep it free. Everything we put out is free. The podcast is free. No sponsors. Everything with the app is free. All the odds comparison, tracking, syncing that's coming, the marketplace, verification. Everything is free, unlike our main competition, GRP Wins. If you guys are on Twitter, then you'll know. Then you might know what that is. But
you know what else is free?
What?
Tweets that trigger us.
Everything is free, but message us and please support us. It goes a long way in keeping the lights on here. All right. Tweets that trigger us.
I don't know what we're yelling about.
I've never seen you mad.
I get peeved.
Why are you in such a bad mood?
What do you care?
It's only a game. Why do you have to be mad?
Okay. This week, I got to tell you a story.
Okay.
As we start this. People at home who are listening... watching on YouTube, please hit the subscribe button if you are watching on YouTube. Tweets that trigger us, the way we usually do this, we go through Twitter. People use the hashtag. Some people DM us directly. We store all these tweets in one place. We haven't done this in a couple months. Some people are going to be like, wow, there's only 4 tweets in this week's tweets that trigger us. 4 of the ones that were tagged got deleted, bro.
Yeah.
People deleted the original tweet.
And we didn't screenshot it?
No, because I'm an idiot and I just kept all the links. So I'm clicking these and they're deleted.
Yeah, it's on me as well. I just like never, I just assume they wouldn't get deleted. Like I assume, yeah, they'll still be there.
We got a screenshot.
One of them was just the most overcooked steak ever. It was a picture of a steak that someone tagged, which was so funny. It was such an overcooked steak that it actually triggered me.
Nothing to do with gambling?
Nothing to do with gambling.
Which, listen, why did he delete that?
Maybe he got so much, like he probably got roasted so much for that. Listen, if you like your steak well done, to each their own, I get it. This wasn't even well, this was beyond well done. Like, and it was one of those tweets where it's like, oh, like sitting down for amazing dinner. Like one of those where they thought they were posting like a hero picture.
And it was just an overcooked steak?
Yes. I will say we do also get a lot of duplicates. These ones were the most duplicated ones. So we'll get into them. Let's go, Zach. All right. Number one. Dinger Tuesday tip. I should say this is from Promo Guy. Promo Guy MI. I don't know if that's Mississippi, Michigan.
Michigan.
Yeah.
Oh, I know this guy.
Am I ripping one of your friends or something?
No, I don't know him that well.
This is not even ripping the person itself. Again, this is just going back to the tweet and why it's aggravating. If your bankroll isn't large enough to follow along, which is totally fine, crazy high variance on this promo, consider betting your dinger picks, dinger being a home run, to record 2+ total bases instead of a home run. Bet a unit or so and avoid the FOMO. So this guy's giving out picks on who's going to homer on any given day, okay? Which he's right. They're high variance picks. Typically, you're betting plus 300, plus 400 some on the best players, sometimes much higher up. The challenge is when you're telling somebody, oh, if you can't bet them to homer, just go out and place this other bet. It's not apples to apples. Like, it's the assumption that somebody is going to...
I'm sorry, guys. Zach just sent me from behind the counter the pick of the overcooked steak.
Oh, he found it. He found it.
Guys, yeah. Put this up right now. I've edited in after if you can't see it.
I can just put the steak. Fucking hilarious. I'll put the steak.
Just put the steak. Forget about the tweet, man.
This is the steak. Yeah, this is the one. How did you get this, Zach? You actually took a picture of it.
Yeah. I don't know. I just like went through and was able to find this.
Made but that I can't find
the original
today.
Like tweet. I don't know why.
But. Yeah, it's deleted. The original tweet is deleted.
The original tweet is deleted, but it still kept the photo. That's all we need, man. This is literally, this is actually, like, I don't even know, what is Sorry. This?
The thing is, he ate so much of it already, but yeah. Yeah, I know. I made that for dinner today. Like, this guy was chewing for over under 60.5 minutes of chew on this steak.
He's got the strongest jaw ever.
Honestly, I completely couldn't hold myself in. I hate interrupting people. Like, I listen to so many podcasts, and I it's such a bad experience when someone interrupts the other guest. But I couldn't not, man. This is the funniest.
I'm glad he found it. I'm glad he found it because I was really upset for a while about not being able to see this. And yes, the original tweet, see this, it's gone. It's not there anymore. Yeah. But it was like, I think it was like a bunch of smiley faces, made great steak today or something like that. I couldn't remember specifically. This thing's
like legitimately has fur in the inside.
To each their own, like I said, there's people out there that will like a nice, well-done, overcooked steak. All right.
Sorry. Back to the thing. Apologies to all the listeners for me interrupting there.
No problem. I just want to get it across that like those are very different bets. If you tell someone, oh, don't go out and place this bet on someone to make a home run, but just go bet them to make a double, those are very, very different things depending on the player. Like there's, for example, someone who has absolutely no speed as a player, right? You're betting them to hit a home run because if it clears the wall, it's gone. It doesn't matter how fast they run the bases. Now, if you're telling them to just go bet a double instead, it's much less likely that they're going to do that. Now, sometimes that's directly priced into odds, but it's no different than me saying to you, oh, like, I think this person's going to single today. But, you know, if you don't want to bet the single or if you want to you sprinkle a little bit more, bet them to hit a triple as well. Those are very different things. The distribution for each player is going to be very different, dependent on a number of different things. So I think that's just really bad advice for someone. Like either you have the bankroll that can sustain that variance and you're willing to lose in the long run. Don't just advocate for a different bet on anything like that someone makes, right?
I think, by the way, just to give this guy some credit, what he is trying to say does kind of make sense in a sense of if your bankroll isn't large enough, you probably shouldn't be betting homer bets, which are typically going to be bets that are like, you know, call it got to hit a home run, might be plus 500. So he's saying hit him like over 1.5 total bases because that line might be something along lines like plus 100. So you're not going to lose that bet as much. That is what he's trying to say. Obviously, it's very incorrect in terms of the recommendation.
Right.
But the overall arching premise is that 100%. If your bankroll is not big enough, don't be dunking plus 1,000
totally
or betting them for, he's saying bet like, but yeah.
Let me apply it to the context of another sport, right? Let's say, for example, you say, I think Josh Allen is going to have lots of opportunities to score a touchdown on the ground today.
But bet his rushing yards over instead.
Exactly.
It is a different
or bet him to throw, or, you know, if you don't want to take something with crazy high variance, just bet him to throw 2+ touchdowns instead. It's very different. That's a very, very different bet that you're recommending. It's not as extreme as the example here, but each of these needs to be evaluated independently of the other. Number two, Zach. God, this steak is hilarious, by the way. I forgot what it looked like.
We're just trying to now like just push people to the YouTube to get extra views, but like This is it. Just actually just come to the YouTube real quick, put the timestamp, go take a look at the steak, and then go back to audio. It is hilarious.
I would actually be very interested if people could try to find me pictures of steaks that are worse than this. Like the cook is even worse than this.
Please tweet it at Rob and circles off.
I would challenge somebody to do that. Could post the link in the YouTube comments too if you're online. This is absolutely terrible. This was a banger, a doozy of a thread right here. Because it's three comments from three different people, all of which made me laugh separately. Ricky says, "You'll never make money in this business laying a favorite at minus 175. I'll give the world a winner right now for free. White Sox first five minus half with five hammers. Big fan of the hammer emoji, I must say. Especially five hammers. However, we've talked about this ad nauseum. You'll never make money laying a favorite at minus 175. Like this is just like bad commentary in general. What I particularly also loved about the first tweet is that he talks about never laying like big prices, then gives the White Sox first five innings minus half without a price attached to it at all. It's just go bet the first five. Price doesn't matter. You know, in the same tweet, the price does matter, but the price doesn't matter. Then we got GFB who responds.
So yeah, he's just basically saying, don't ever bet a favorite at minus 175. Bet the White Sox first five minus 0.5. Obviously, it's less than minus 175.
Well, I know that.
I would assume.
Yeah.
But yeah, he doesn't even give the price.
Yeah. Like he's talking about price sensitivity for one, and then goes out and gives a bet without a price attached to it. All right. Some random response, which I just wanted to include here because it has nothing to do with anything, but it's, bro, I'm plus 20 units doing parlays this past month. Went 5 for 5 yesterday. Brewers money line, Braves money line, Cards money line, Tigers money line, Giants -1.5. All these things are big favorites. So he's kind of trying to lay shame to this other guy saying like, what are you talking about? I'm parlaying these.
Yeah, I'm
these
plus minus 20 units.
175, I'm plus 20 units. I love when people also choose just like the arbitrary endpoints, eh? I'm plus 20 units this past month. Okay. What are you this year? Like, what are you in
your life? Well, he also says, I'm plus 20 units doing parlays this past month. Right. He may even be down on straights this month.
We have no idea, but the arbitrary endpoints always get me. And then the final guy, going 5 for 5, all favorites, isn't nothing impressive, fam. I mean, it's not necessarily... But
it is.
It is.
It definitely is.
Yeah, of course. You're what? Like, again, this is all just probability, right? That parlay that guy made was not like a minus 200 parlay. It ended up paying out a decent amount. It is hard to go 5 for 5, even when you are betting favorites. It is. It's difficult to do so.
Hilarious. That is very funny.
This is a great thread. Thank you very much.
Going 5 for 5 all favorites isn't nothing impressive, fam. It's more. It's better than going not 5 for 5.
Yeah,
it's pretty impressive still.
Of course,
you can win a lot of money.
Listen, we're not suggesting it's impossible here, but it's not. It's tough to go. Ask how many people on any given night are betting 5-game parlays and they can use favorites and they're going 5 for 5 regularly. It's not happening. It is impressive.
Hilarious.
I love that. Three different people. On to the next one, Zach. Oh, man. There's so much going on
here. Oh, there's a lot here.
There's a lot here. Okay, so I'm going to summarize this one because I saw this. This is the night of the NHL draft. All right? This always gets me going. Massive swing is highly unusual with no news. So we're talking about the first overall pick here. The odds moving pretty heavily before the draft. So I can't...
Wait, but hold up. He says... In a big sudden swing, betting sites have in the last 10 minutes made Slavkovsky the favorite to be chosen first. This is the NHL draft.
He's pointing that out. He's saying massive swing is highly unusual with no news. Perhaps someone has seen the jersey or there is a leak. Fair enough. I think that's good commentary. He's pointing out the swing and the odds. He's, you know, he's not a seasoned better guy.
No, but he's doing okay there. That's fair to say.
Right. So now he's going to get a couple responses. One is going to say someone knows who the Habs are taking. Another is going to point out that this happened with the NBA draft with even bigger money. This one is the one that gets me, though. breaks my heart, not. Dumb to post odds for something that some people have full control of the outcome. Why not tell your friends so they can make easy money? Okay, so let's start there. Actually, we can unpack this all with the final comment from Jack Todd 46, who says, exactly. There is a colossal gambling scandal coming that is going to rearrange everything in sports. I can assure you that there's nothing that's going to stem from the NBA and NHL drafts markets that is going to be considered colossal and is going to rearrange everything in sports. Let's just start there with that's not going to happen. However, every sports book has the option of whether or not they're going to offer draft props.
You pick it.
They also have the option of how much they're going to take on draft props. This is one of the inherent challenges. Okay, if I know who's going to go first overall, it is still going to be very difficult for me to get down life-changing money on that player. In fact, it's borderline impossible, even if I exhaust all the avenues I have. This is me as a pro sports bettor. If I reach out to everyone in my circle and say, this person's going first overall, let's get him, and we like collectively, yeah, we got to do splitting and so on and so forth, I'll make some good money. It'd be easy money or whatever. But I am by no means going to put a sports book out of business. There is so much.
You would also make most of your money like spread across all different sports books.
Exactly.
And different accounts. So like you're going to make like no one single sports book will be responsible for probably even more than 10% of your winnings.
Agreed, 100%. Second thing to take into account here is that there's tons of recreational money that's going to go into betting the draft as well. People who have absolutely no information, they think that they know better than, oh, this is dumb that this guy is moving first. There's no way the Habs are going to take whoever first overall.
Not Shane Wright.
There's no way Paolo Banchero is going first overall, and they're going to continue to bet into a market because they don't know any better. So, like, breaks my heart not is one of the funniest, by the way.
Breaks my heart.
Not. Dumb to post odds for something that some people have full control of the outcome. The amount of exposure from the sports book is so small. It's really tiny in the grand scheme of things. And there's so much recreational money to offset it. And it's such a high hold market for the sports book that if it was dumb for the sports book to post it, then they won't post it. That's pretty much what's going to happen going forwards.
But hold up though, because a lot of times they do post it just because, like, so here's what I say, like for something like the NHL draft.
Yep.
If somebody's looking to bet on the NHL draft and their sports book that they have doesn't post it and they really wanted a bet for tonight, that may be a reason to change sports books. So I do think oftentimes a sports book may post it.
100%. Residual effects.
Just to not lose customers to other books. So all in, it's still positive for them, but they may even expect to take a slight loss on it. But they're not going out of business off that. Like they're losing like in the single digit thousands, maybe maximum.
So one, there's marketing efforts that are tied to this. So they can obviously promote whenever they have odds up for stuff like that. The other point I would make is I used to consult for sportsbooks. I mention this a lot of times when I talk about sportsbook because I do have some experience with this, but a lot of times, the sportsbook does not want you to lose every single bet you make. That is a horrible experience for the player. It's very hard for them to retain the player. Like Johnny said, there are markets where they don't actually care if the players win because it's actually a good thing when the players are occasionally winning. They would much rather you play like for 4 or 5 years and slowly bleed money than to lose all your money right away and never play with them again. That's just common sense. And that's like, they don't want a poor experience to happen. So there's all sorts of these residual effects, like I mentioned, but I found the thread hilarious. I always find it hilarious when it's just regular sports people talking about gambling markets as if they know exactly how that gambling market works. But
what's crazy about you're saying with the sports books, how like they don't want everyone to lose every single bet. Like, obviously, like, cause they, it's like, yeah. If you just deposit your like $200 and lose it, all at once, then like, what's the fun of gambling? Like the fun, as we've mentioned multiple times, is not actually gambling. The fun is winning a bet, right? So you got to be able to at least at a minimum, you know, like win a bet or two. And that's why they offer bonuses, right? Like they want you to start in front of the eight ball so that, in front of the eight ball so that you don't have to worry about like, oh, I put in, I lost, I'm already down. They start you with like a $200 bonus or a $1,000 bonus so that you can actually have that winning feeling and sensation. Like I'm already up, right? So
agreed.
Definitely you're right on the sense where like, you know, they know what they're doing. It's not a gambling scandal.
It was July 7th that this thread happened. I'm still waiting for the colossal gambling scandal. That's going to rearrange everything in sports.
That was either that OHL guy in Kanish or...
remember that? Yeah, I don't want to bring that up again because I think the OHL was doing an investigation or something into that. I have no idea, but that was an interesting one.
Yeah, I mean, it was very obvious to see what happened if you just know anything about gambling. But there was that one, and then what else would be a scandal? I don't know. Back in the day, Jared Kosart, the pitcher on the Dolphins, when he was DMing guys for picks.
Oh, man. That,
sorry, the Dolphins. The pitcher on the Marlins.
Was it Jared Kosart? Was that his name?
Yeah, the pitcher.
I remember.
I streamed him one time in fantasy. He went two innings, the back end of played fantasy baseball. He went like two innings, like six earned, dropped him. I don't think he was ever started again in fantasy baseball.
I remember that so clearly because at the time that he was DMing one of my close friends, Dan, check shoved on Twitter. Was it a different account? He was running a different account. He was back in the day. Whatever. I mean, let bygones be bygones type of thing.
Yeah, but for everyone on gambling Twitter listening, I'm sure they'll be happy that I called you out on that.
Yeah, and whatever. I mean, I'm sure he listens to this podcast as well, but whatever. We can get into that another day. However, I remember that very clearly because he then distributed that everywhere. Like he posted it publicly. Kosart deleted his account. Why does that name not sound right to me?
Jared Kosart.
It's Jared Kosart. He was 24 years old, playing for the Miami Marlins.
Okay.
After an MLB investigation to the gambling habits of Miami Marlins pitcher Jared Kosart, the 24-year-old hurler was cleared of betting on baseball.
Yeah, he had reached out directly to friends for baseball picks, I think. It was exactly, but like that.
Wait, for baseball picks or for other sports? I think it was other sports.
Listen, I don't want to speak. I remember that night, gambling Twitter blew up.
Let's see if Chekshov will come on the podcast. And then
you know what? He does have a bunch of good stories from back in the day.
He was betting on other sports. Sorry.
He was always in the middle of this shit. At that time, I think his Twitter account was Ghostface Killer.
Yeah. Wait, is that public knowledge or no?
It is now.
Okay.
It is
now. Jared Kosart used to DM Ghostface Killer. Yeah. And he was emailing him. He was DMing him on Twitter for gambling picks. And then did he just out him one day?
Like, he literally outed him like mid conversation.
Why?
He just posted all the images publicly.
Why did he do that?
Kosar deleted his account completely, like suspended. Yeah, deleted. But
also, why was Jared Kosar DMing this guy who's not even famous? Like he's going to respond to a burner.
Yeah.
Why is he DMing him from his verified Twitter account where it says like Florida Marlins starting pitcher?
I don't know. He's 24 at the time. Didn't know any better. Obviously very dumb thing to do, but
let's see if he'll come on he has some good stories.
I want to do an episode one day. I'm just speaking out loud here. That is like people sharing their best stories.
Like just like multiple people on at one.
Yeah. Day. Like how we did the Super Bowl prop special type of thing. Cut up one of those. Someone's going to steal this idea now. Should have never said it out loud. But I think that would be good. And that was definitely, now that I remember, I forgot that happened. That's why I was so excited about hearing it. But all right, one more. All right. At BetLab Analytics. These ones make me laugh a little bit as well. Yankees total 6.5. That's kind of nuts. I'm going to research all the outcomes when Yankees were involved in games totaled 7 or less, and also the 6.5 specifically to get inside the bookmakers' minds on that. I'll be right back.
That's hilarious, man.
It's a great tweet, but sadly, a lot of my friends do stuff like this.
Is he joking though or no?
No, this is dead serious.
Okay.
This is a dead, he I think posted a thread afterwards of like, oh, when the total was this, you know, this is the Yankees record, so on and so. Okay. If we date back further, like, guys, I mean, I don't know why people, like, I actually have to say this out loud, especially with the Yankees. Like, the Yankees team this year is very good. They're a very good baseball team. Previous years' worth data of the Yankees is not telling you anything of value about this year's team. Period. Also,
it's a different team.
But it's a different league. Like, how many of those years were juiced ball? How many were dead ball? Like, you're not comparing apples to apples.
Forget about that. Even if it's the same year, like, there's a different pitcher probably. Right. Like,
it doesn't matter. None of this matters. There is nothing that is valuable about saying, okay, the total in this game is 6.5. I don't really see this all that often. I'm going to look back to previous years, see when their totals were also 6.5, and then make a decision according to that info. Who cares? It doesn't matter. None of it matters. Like, just logic. Just think about it logically. Why you would ever place a bet based off that info. You never would. But what I particularly love.
I'll be right back. That's the one.
I'll be right back is great. But I also love to get inside the bookmakers' minds on that. As if the bookmakers know something. They know that they're posting a 6.5 here and that people are going to bet it one way or another. It's going to get inside their minds. This whole tweet is so well crafted that I honestly, this is like a Hall of Fame type of tweet. It's like a hidden gem. And it just ends with, I'll be right back. Like, he would post that. Like, we're all anxiously waiting, and he's going to, like, are people now glued to this thread for 5 minutes?
Does he have a lot of followers or no?
No, I don't know who this is. I have no idea.
I'll find it.
No clue.
No, I'm checking it now. That's like almost 3,000.
Okay.
Not bad.
Reminds me of a few people that I've known over time. The historical stuff. Anyways.
Guys, I have a little more info on this Jared Cosart situation.
I thought you were going to provide more info on the steak and the temperature it was cooked at.
All right, yeah. What do we got on Cosart?
So I'll briefly go through it. Essentially what happened was he just outed him on Twitter with these screenshots, blurred out all of his own personal messages, just left Cosart's messages. So it kind of starts with Cosart saying, "No prob, I bet large, all caps. LOL, looking for some help anywhere I can. Saw a retweet on your underplay and hammered it. Bro, so many people on Baylor and Virginia almost want to opposite just for shits. Thoughts on over Baylor? I like it a lot." So he's just, for the most part, he's looking for just advice here.
Yeah.
And he's then
for a tout, basically.
Yeah, he is. He's looking for a tout.
And then basically these screenshots that I just read to you get released. And he comes out and says, you guys are going to love this. "Around 2 weeks ago, my Twitter account was accessed by someone else.
Oh, yeah.
They began to send incriminating DMs to a number of accounts to make it appear that I am addicted to gambling and have bet on baseball. I did not realize that this was happening until last evening. There will be more screenshots. I have not, nor will I ever bet on the game of baseball." He was cleared of betting on baseball. They said the MLB concluded he didn't. But then Wednesday at 12:34 a.m., Ghost Fade Killa tweeted, "Made an MLB player delete his Twitter account." Lulz.
Yeah. Oh, man. I do remember that. I was in a WhatsApp chat with Ghost Fade Killa at that time. He was kind of letting us know what was going on in real time. It was a pretty epic moment. There's more I can't share on air. I wish I could. Stories, I should say. Because it would out people that I don't want to out without their permission. We could potentially have some sort of story time.
That Twitter story time.
There's been a lot over the course of the years.
Yeah, the guy who deleted his thing when Bolte went ding dong for the Grand Slam.
Jimmy, I haven't talked to Jimmy
since that day.
I have on WhatsApp, but he held true to that. David Bolte murdered me. What an account. If David Bote, what is it? Ding dongs?
Yeah.
I'll never tweet again.
And then he didn't tweet again.
Honestly, credit to that guy. It takes...
Wait, tell the story better for those people listening. Don't even...
I honestly think this is probably like the fifth time we've told this story.
Did we? Okay,
cut it out. No, it's okay. It doesn't matter. For those who are listening now for the first time, there's this one guy who's like, he literally tweeted that. He's watching a live Cubs game. If David Bote ding-dongs, I will never tweet again. David Bote hit a home run on that at bat. And the guy who had like a decent sized following tweeted every day about sports betting, like was prominently involved in gambling Twitter, never tweeted again. We're talking like 5 years ago now, right? Like,
I don't think we told it because did you hear it before, Zach?
No.
Yeah.
I don't think it was with our previous producer.
Maybe back in the day, but no, I don't think we told it. Yeah, he legitimately never tweeted again. And you could still access his account.
That's hilarious.
That's his last tweet. It's sad.
I'd love to get him on to tell that story. Like, I don't know what made, like, does he regret it? That's what I want to know. Does he regret it?
He obviously had a massive bet on the Cubs and needed it. He used his one time.
Yeah, he hit his one time. The first time I thought it was the opposite, but I've come to realize that I think it's he used his one time.
No,
I thought it was like I'm down bad. Like, I can't deal with this home run right now. I'll be gone type of thing. But no, I think he won.
I was actually on the opposite side of that game. I had the Nationals, and it was a Jonathan Papelbon blown save on a David Bote grand slam. I'll remember that day as well, just because I lost. I was on the other side of that, and I was subject to a blown save. But it made it a little bit better, at least that I saw that off the Twitter, and I realized, you know, it is what it is. That's a fun thing.
Jonathan Papelbon is one of the most interesting characters ever. I used to have Blue Jays season tickets.
What was that guy's name on Twitter?
It's not coming to me now. Thrill Barton.
Will Barton.
But I had season tickets for the Jays. First row behind the bullpen. And we used to go see as many Red Sox and Yankees games as possible, obviously. Jonathan Papelbon, he's the only guy that would heckle the fans back and actually like give them the finger. He was actually the best. Like, if you're into a game and you're ripping someone else in another bullpen and the guy just puts up his glove and gives you the middle finger in the middle of the glove and starts giving it back to you, I have mad respect for players like that. He also, for some reason or another, don't know what's going on, would always reorganize the Gatorade and water bottles in the bullpen from smallest to largest. I don't know why I picked up on that. Always. Used to drive him bananas. It's true. If somebody put like a water bottle down that didn't fit the pattern, he would go and move it.
Didn't he fight Bryce Harper in the dugout?
He did. Yeah. Guys, unfortunately, I know we're talking about Papelbon. I'm sadly mistaken. It was a Ryan Madsen blown save.
Oh,
just pulled up the game.
I found his Twitter, by the way. He's liked tweets, so he's still active. He goes on there, but he's never tweeted again. So that day was 2018, 08-12.
Yep. So almost 4 years.
Yeah. It was 3-0 Nationals going into the bottom of the ninth, and then it was a pinch hit, bases loaded, David Bote grand slam.
And he renamed the account to David Bote murdered me, right. Deceased, and he puts the date, and he goes, cause of death, homicide, assailant, David Bote, weapon, baseball bat.
Please post almost 5,000 likes on the tweet.
That is one of the most epic gambling Twitter moments. I mean... I wonder, he's got to have a burner though. Let's be real.
Okay, but prior to that though, oh man, this is funny, man. This, if you dig, so that was at 10:59, he tweeted that. At 10:53, he tweeted, Schwarber, big boy, ding dong here. And then he quoted and said, please. And then he went with the, if David Bote ding dongs here, I will never tweet again for the rest of my life. And he did, and he never, wow, at least under this account.
I've met this guy before. Yes. I've went out to dinner, drinks with him in Boston, at a Sloan.
Do you have his number?
I do.
Okay, text him and see if he will come on the pod to recap that day. That's a good thing to do.
Oh man, that would be.
All right, we've gone on way too long here.
All right, for those watching on YouTube, please subscribe, hit the like button, commentary. We're looking for a commentary on badly cooked steaks. I'm also going to see if I could get this person on that cooked that steak. I need to know more about that person. At least have some interaction with them so that I can know more. As we get on for the rest of August, we'll have a little bit more football preview coming up. Some guests. It's going
to
be...
We provided absolutely zero betting knowledge today to anyone here. So I'm sorry for wasting your time, but I hope you still enjoyed the rest of the episode.
If you're in Canada, Sports Interaction, yeah, Pinatas, tweet us your screenshots.
Thank you. Have a good one.